Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual. For all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs, Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. George Soros has spent much of his life betting big on banks, currencies, whole nations, and his bets have paid off to the tune of billions of dollars. So when Soros speaks on the economy, the impulse is to listen. And here's what he's saying now. This is no ordinary correction we're living through. This is the big one, the bursting of a financial super bubble. This hour, On Point billionaire, global financier, and big-time philanthropist George Soros on the global economy now. George Soros will join us momentarily, but first we turn to Greg Ipp, chief economics editor at the Wall Street Journal and soon to be U.S. economics editor for The Economist magazine, for the latest on the markets and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. Greg Ipp, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
So Bernanke's talking just yesterday, and it looks like the interpretation of his remarks is that we're in for more bad news than he might have hoped.
Well, I think that there were two important points that Mr. Bernanke made yesterday, Tom. The first was to say we have taken this unprecedented step to actually lend money to the investment banks such as Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch. And we'll continue to do that as long as the markets seem really unsettled and people are afraid that the investment banks will have nowhere else to borrow. And so he has said we will maintain the availability of that money into next year. Now, there's two ways to interpret that, Tom. One could say, well, obviously the markets are still very unsettled, and he's very concerned if he feels that this emergency lending facility must still be available. But the other more positive way to look at it is by it's a way of offering reassurance to investors that they do not have to worry that a renewed bout of instability in the markets will take down one of these big firms the way it more or less took down Bear Stearns back in March. The second point he made was more of a political point, Tom, and that's, now that we have all these extra lending facilities to companies that we never used to lend to before, we need the regulatory authority to go with it.
Need the regulatory authority. Let's listen for just a second to his characterization. Here's Ben Bernanke yesterday.
The financial turmoil is ongoing, and our efforts today are concentrated on helping the financial system return to more normal functioning.
More normal functioning. Does that mean more normal as in historical regulation or something else?
Well, I think that Mr. Bernanke doesn't like the fact that it's come to this, where the Fed needs to ask for more regulatory power. But what they're looking at is a situation where investors are very skittish still about lending money to all sorts of firms. That, in turn, has made firms, such as banks and investment banks, less willing or able to lend to their customers, which is, in the end, middle America and their desire to own a home. Mortgage rates, Tom, are still very elevated relative to treasury bond yields. And one of the reasons why is that the ability of banks and other companies that traditionally make those mortgage loans has been significantly circumscribed in terms of their ability to borrow money. And so, as Mr. Bernanke said, these problems, these strains in the markets are continuing, even though it's probably safe to say we've passed the point of maximum danger, that the steps the Fed has taken have contained the crisis somewhat. But it is by no means over. And indeed, you could argue that the economic pain is still really in the early stages.
Past the point of a maximum danger. We'll talk in just a moment to George Soros, but what about the market more broadly? I mean, a lot of folks with just their little 401ks suddenly seem to be fearful that this thing could really go in the tank. Do you sense that now out among big, you know, wise guy market watchers, Greg? Are they worried about a major, major tumble, or are they beginning to feel more assured?
I think, Tom, that what I would say is that back in March, they thought there was a small but rising probability of a truly catastrophic event, a Great Depression type of conflagration where many large lending firms basically went out of business and brought the economy down into a severe, deep, deep recession. And I believe that those fears have largely waned. And what they've been replaced by is a more sort of fear of a garden variety recession where the unemployment rate continues to ratchet higher, consumers tighten their belts. And that's the sort of thing in which you will have a bear market in stocks, which, you know, to be honest, is something that used to come along every 5 or 6 years and is really nothing to lose a lot of sleep over. But it's less likely that we're going to have the type of deep, deep contraction in stocks and the economy that might have happened if the financial crisis had truly, that might have happened if the financial system had truly imploded.
You have spoken with George Soros recently. You know he's not writing and talking these days about a garden variety tightening, but something much, much more substantial. Where would you put him in? Well, he'll speak for himself in just a moment here, but where would you put him in the universe of economic analysts right now? Big picture guys, Greg.
He's definitely on the pessimistic end of things, Tom. There's no question. On the other hand, thus far, it's tended to pay to be pessimistic because things have continued to get worse as opposed to get better. Now, George sees this recent credit crisis as the end game of a problem that's been building for 25 years, and he includes in that the 1987 stock market crash and the 1998 Asian financial and economic crisis, and we basically bailed our way out of both of those crises with easy money, which only led to more risky lending and risky borrowing, therefore guaranteeing that the final bubble would be bigger than ever and the comeuppance would be more painful than ever. That's a pretty scary thought, and I'm the first to admit that. It definitely makes me want to sort of like run and buy the, Sterno and the canned food and so forth. But it is a minority view, and as Mr. Soros himself will acknowledge, he's had these dire scenarios in the past, and they have not come to fruition. And indeed, it is possible that wise and timely application of policy support from the Federal Reserve and others, and the natural corrective mechanisms of a market economy like our own, will prevent these bad scenarios from coming to be true.
A minority view, maybe, but from a big player and a big name. Greg Ipp is chief economics editor at the Wall Street Journal, soon to be U.S. economics editor for The Economist magazine. He spoke to us from Washington. Greg, good luck with the new job. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
George Soros has been called the father of the modern hedge fund. He's chairman of Soros Fund Management. He's also chairman and founder of the Open Society Institute, which gives away close to $500 million a year to promote democratic governance, human rights, and economic and social reform. He poured millions into a failed effort to stop George W. Bush's reelection in 2004. His latest book is The New Paradigm for Financial Markets, The Credit Crisis of 2008 and What It Means. He joins us from New York. George Soros, welcome back to On Point.
A pleasure.
Very nice to have you. Super bubble, what does that mean?
Well, as Greg started to explain it, I have a theory of bubbles, which is a minority view, but I think it's an interesting theory, which says that every bubble is based on something real, but then it has a misconception, that misinterpretation of reality. And there is a what I call a two-way reflexive interaction between people's views and the actual state of affairs. And that interaction, in the first instance, reinforces both the prevailing trend and the prevailing misconception. So it's self-reinforcing, self-validating at the beginning. But then the misconception gets so big that reality can't sustain it, and then there is a reversal, and that's the bust. So you have a boom and a bust, initially self-reinforcing, eventually self-defeating process. That's my theory of bubbles.
But what makes this one a super bubble, Mr. Soros?
And what makes this a super bubble, that there is, of course, a housing bubble that has touched it off. But there has been a larger, slower bubble developing, starting in 1980, when Reagan became president and Margaret Thatcher prime minister in the UK. Mm. And the belief that in the magic of the marketplace, the idea that that markets will take care of themselves, that the government should stay out of markets, that there is no need for regulation. So deregulation and globalization, that's when it really started. And it was based on the misconception that markets actually tend towards equilibrium and can correct their own excesses. I think that's false. That's why you have regulators, And when things get out of hand, the regulators come and save you. And they have been able to do it because we have had a series of financial crises since 1980, any number of them, small ones, you know, Continental Illinois, savings and loans, long-term capital management, and so on. But each time when the real economy was threatened by the crisis, the Fed stepped in, lowered interest rates, monetary fiscal stimulus, so on. So we got out of it. And that reinforced both the credit expansion, which was the basis of this period of economic prosperity, and the misconception that markets are self-correcting.
I would think we have to take a short break here, but just let me remark, if I may, George Soros, I would think that you would, of all people, believe in the magic of the marketplace. After all, it made you a billionaire.
Well, it's actually my understanding of markets, that markets are not perfect, that made me a billionaire.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with billionaire, global financier, and philanthropist George Soros, investor, philosopher, political player. He's warning that we're facing the super bad ending of a long super bubble, as he calls it, in the global economy. His latest book is out, The New Paradigm for Financial Markets, The Credit Crisis of 2008 and What It Means. He joins us from New York. You can join the conversation. Does it look like a super bubble bursting to you? Have we played out our big bag of tricks of avoidance and now it's time to face the music? Or is Soros too bleak here? Will we be back on the upswing in 2009 and wondering what all the worry was about? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. George Soros, there in New York, would you listen with me for just a moment to something from Henry Paulson here? This is Henry Paulson, Treasury Secretary, in March of this year, talking with CNN, is saying, in effect, trust me, we're okay.
I have great confidence in our economy and the long-term fundamentals. There's a lot of discussion about what's going on in the short term, but trust me, our economy is structurally sound, and our long-term economic fundamentals compare favorably with other major nations around the world.
Trust me, says Secretary of the Treasury Paulson. George Soros, what do you say?
Well, you know, that's a part of the, deception that is practiced by the authorities, because they know that the economy needs to be managed, massaged, manipulated. But they claim that markets tend towards equilibrium and they should be left alone. So there's a little contradiction there in their position. They know about reflexivity, but they are practicing it, but they are not admitting it. And I think it's time to come to terms with this and recognize that markets don't tend towards equilibrium. They do need to be regulated. And the regulators in the last 25 years have failed to fulfill their obligation.
But isn't,
because they left it to the markets to devise new instruments, decide how much risk they should be taking, how much leverage they should incur, and so on.
But who would you leave that to? I mean, the Fed's been all over it. Alan Greenspan was in there just in the last 24 hours. Fed Chief Ben Bernanke, he doesn't seem to be leaving it all up to the markets. He's talking about more support for investment banks, lending facilities. He's talking about more regulation. Whatever Paulson was saying in March, they seem to be talking a kind of a hand in the game pretty strongly right now.
Yeah. Well, it is their duty to protect the financial markets from collapse, but I think that it ought to be their duty to prevent asset bubbles from growing too big. And for that, first of all, they would have to acknowledge that markets have a tendency to produce bubbles, that they don't necessarily tend towards equilibrium. Then you then have the obligation to keep the deviations, the excesses, moderate them so that the bubbles don't grow too big, because the bigger they grow, the more damage they do when they bust.
If Western economies had been practicing what you're preaching there, would you have ever made your billions? I mean, you profited from markets that were fairly wildly out of equilibrium. You know, you were famous for bringing the British pound to its knees. Thailand, you know, people, spit when they say your name. After what happened with the Thai baht. I mean, haven't you profited from the very stuff you're talking about?
Yes, I'm a market participant. I play according to the rules, and I think that I perhaps have a better understanding of how markets really work, and I can see bubbles developing and take advantage of it, yes. That is my job as a market participant.
You're very good at sort of putting in plain terms what's going on in the economy, and there's a portion in the book called Setting the Stage where you describe what's gone on in the last couple, 3-4 years that brought us to where we are right now. And I wonder if you could give us a super pared-down, condensed version of that. What's the George Soros narrative, storyline of what's happened in the last handful of years that's brought us to where we are today?
No, I think that would actually be a little bit more complicated, because there are a number of factors. But certainly one of the factors is the housing bubble, which was a bubble. And people like me and many others recognized it as such. We made a mistake. We thought it would collapse sooner, or it would be reversed sooner. So that's one aspect. But then there are these synthetic instruments, these CDOs, and this alphabet soup of new financial instruments that have been introduced.
For slicing and dicing credit and risk and all the rest and passing it all over the place.
Yeah, you know, since I wasn't actually that active in the market, I don't know them all, but there's credit default swaps, mm-hmm. the CDS. There is an enormous amount of them outstanding. It's now $62 trillion worth. That is actually more than half the entire household wealth of the United States. It's, I think, several times the national debt. So it's an enormous market. The CDOs, I don't even know what the... But they stand
just
for.
One super sophisticated thing, quote unquote, after another when it comes to slicing and dicing risk and passing it around. And you're saying, what, those helped blow up the super bubble?
That's right, because you see what happened. Those instruments were designed on this false conception that markets tend towards equilibrium and deviations are random. And, of course, if you have self-reinforcing processes, then those are not random. And so these instruments were designed on a false premises, and they were rated AAA, and a few weeks later, they were practically valueless. So it shows that there's something was fundamentally wrong with them. And they were in tremendous demand. And in fact, there were not enough mortgages certainly not enough subprime mortgages to create these instruments, so they were artificially manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
There's many more of these instruments outstanding than there are mortgages. So that is where the excesses of the market came in. So that's the other very important factor that should be remembered. Players, the investment banks, hedge funds, base their calculations of risk also on this idea of random deviations. And that idea was proven false in 1998 when long-term capital management that was using these techniques and was leveraged to the hilt was actually facing bankruptcy and had to be bailed out by the head of the New York Fed getting the creditors into the room and say, you've got to get together and help this firm out, so, because otherwise the system will melt down.
So here,
and that's how actually we avoided the trouble then. We should have learned from that, but we didn't. And that's why it came back to haunt us now.
So here's our super financier saying that markets don't tend toward equilibrium or steady state, that those random deviations that that really whack people are not just deviations. Maybe they're built in. We've got a lot of listeners who want to speak with you, Mr. Soros. Let me go to Fairview, Tennessee, and Stuart, if I may. Stuart, you're on the air with George Soros.
Hello, Tom. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind, Stuart?
Thank you, Mr. Soros. Well, I want to preface by saying that intellectually I'm not very sophisticated about all this, even though I study it and I try to learn it. So here's my take. With the baby boomers retiring, Medicaid, Medicare in deep trouble, a zero savings rate in this country, health care that is in trouble, all these things going on, a $2 trillion war, some are saying, I don't think the American taxpayers can sustain this. The only way to raise revenue would be to raise taxes exorbitantly, which would be a slam on the American economy. And so I think all these things are coming together, and they're going to send this economy into a tailspin. I don't think it'll be as bad as the Great Depression, but I'm terribly concerned. I'm a middle-aged man. My wife and I work very, very hard for what we have. We're saving every penny we can so that if it does go to that, we can make it through those hard times. We're doing everything we can to be debt-free, and I'm concerned that the middle class is being squeezed. All these things are coming together. I could keep naming them.
Yeah, the fear is real, and we hear it, Stuart.
I think that this country could sustain it, and then there's going to have to be a major, major, major correction and a lot of pain, and it won't be a year or two. I see it as being...
Let's get the Soros view. George Soros, you're writing about the decline of the dollar. It's losing its position as the accepted reserve currency. The breakdown, the specter of breakdown in the prevailing world order and a period of destruction of financial wealth leading to a new order. What? Where are we headed?
Well, the caller touched on the other aspect of this. That's why I said it's not so easy to describe it in a few words, because this is the external problem, the fact that we've with globalization, where the United States is the center of the system, the dollar is the accepted reserve currency, we have been able to tap into the savings of the world, suck them up to the center, and we've been able to consume more than we produce, and borrow the money that we were spending. Mm-hmm. So our current account has been in a chronic deficit, and it has been growing over this 25 years of the super bubble, and it peaked around 6.5% of the gross national product. So every towards the end, in 06, let's say, we basically consumed 6.5, spent 6.5% more than we earned. And that has come to an end. You see, now it's shrinking because the rest of the world is no longer willing to accept and pile up these dollars. There's a flight from the dollar, and since there is no suitable alternative currency, there is actually a flight from currencies. So there is a, this is one of the factors why you've had this bubble developing in commodities.
And oil.
In oil, food, a number of commodities has been going up in price.
But where do you see this going, George Soros? I mean, breakdown in the prevailing world order, destruction of financial wealth, a new order emerging. Paint the picture for what you see coming.
Well, let's not exaggerate. First of all, I'm not talking about returning
your
to
words.
1930s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we will repeat the Great Depression
Good.
As it was then, because we have learned something from it. The authorities are not going to allow the banks to fail and so on. So I don't want to exaggerate. But this particular aspect of the super bubble is definitely now reversed. In other words, the current account deficit is going to shrink. We will not be able to finance it. So we are already, because of the decline of the dollar, actually our exports are increasing, our imports are decreasing. So our current account deficit is now actually being corrected.
Trade deficit, essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's a very painful process because it means they've got less. We are able to consume less, and that is what the caller was worried about.
Yep.
And I think he has some reason to be worried.
Let me take a quick call before the break from Boise, Idaho, and Shane. Shane, you're on the air with George Soros.
I just I had a thought about what Mr. Soros was saying about the authorities deceiving the public about how bad the credit crisis is,
okay,
how the economy is in a downturn. But in the actuality, it's the reason that Mr. Soros continues to play this kind of game is because if he does talk the economy down, anything that he's put into liquidities when the stock market goes down, he can just turn around once it's down to the bottom and buy more.
Yeah.
And own even more than he did before.
Right. Shane, our time is short before the break. Let us pick it up. George Soros, you have come out of retirement to get back in the investment game. You have gone after whole economies and currencies before. Could you be playing some great game with us right now?
Well, you know, I don't think that one investor or one guru can influence the markets and cause these events. If my analysis is wrong, I will lose money. And if my analysis is right, then I make money. But I'm not causing the current decline.
You have cried wolf before. You've said yourself. Are you so sure you've got it right this time, sir?
No, I'm not actually, because what I'm saying is that the future is unpredictable, and the authorities might be able to lead us out of this trouble. And there are policies that will make the situation better than it would be otherwise. I'm actually arguing that they are not doing enough. You see, you have a serious problem with foreclosures.
Let us come back and look at that, if we may, George Soros, there in New York. We have to take a short break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour with billionaire, global financier, and philanthropist George
Soros, investor, philosopher, political player. He's warning we're facing the super bad ending of a long super bubble in the global economy, out in the last couple of months with a book called The New Paradigm for Financial Markets, The Credit Crisis of 2008, and what it means. George Soros joins us from New York. We've got callers from all over the place. Let's go to Oklahoma. You follow Oklahoma, and Penny. Penny, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I mostly agree with George. I don't completely think that we're headed for cooking off Sterno and living in the woods, but I totally disagree with everybody that says this is a garden variety recession. I have a lot of examples that I'm looking at across the board. Even though I live in rural Oklahoma, I lived for a lot of years in California working in the high-tech industry. I used to be able to get contract work, online work. That's dried up. I stopped my car and pulled off the road when I heard this program and have been waiting to talk because I'm driving to McAlester, Oklahoma in hopes of getting a job with one of these little energy companies entering data for maybe 25% of what I used to make.
So what do you think is different, Penny? Do you take George Soros' analysis, or do you have what's your take?
Well, my take is that, and I, like I said, I don't have a background in economics, but by observation and what I've watched on the news and what I've heard, my take is that our financial analysts and the people in charge of the finances have been lying to us. It's the same as, employees. We're like the employees that went to work for the high-tech companies, like WorldCom and Enron and the places in Silicon Valley where they said, no, the company's fine. Keep buying the stock. No, don't move your retirement out of the stock, And in the background, they were taking care of themselves. I think that a lot of the people in charge are taking care of themselves. I'm not meaning to be ignorant or feel like people are plotting against us. But I do believe that term that he used, this alphabet soup of financial instruments that are not regulated and are not transparent to the average person, the average investor, the average holder of a 401k or an IRA, they sit there and we watch our investments just go in the toilet, even though we're very conservative in our investments and they're losing thousands by the quarter.
Penny, in Oklahoma, let us put it to George Soros. George Soros, how about it? Is it really possible? I mean, Penny sees the consequences, her own search for a job underway right now, and good luck with that, Penny. But her fear sitting in Oklahoma beside the road is that, there's a kind of giant scam going on here. You live inside that world. Is that really possible? Aren't the markets bigger, more powerful than that?
Yeah. No, actually, there is an element of that. I mean, I don't think that first of all, there have been a lot of scams with subprime lending. Yeah. I mean, those subprime loans were made basically to the disadvantaged. It's the minorities, the old people, who suffered the brunt of that, and there were deceptive practices. Now, these alphabet soup of are largely, I think, self deception. In other words, the people who were putting them out didn't realize that they were putting out paper that was worthless.
These rarefied financial instruments, yes.
Yes, I think that there's a lot of self-deception, but there was also some really questionable practices. The rating agencies, for instance, they were profiting from the increased business, and they really didn't act quite in good faith. So there's a lot of things to be critical here, and there is basically a fundamental misunderstanding about markets that became tremendously influential. It has influenced the big banks and the investment banks in their behavior, and it has influenced the regulators who have not been on the job regulating these, allowing these unregulated markets to develop.
I want to ask you about what you might see as an alternative to what you call a misunderstanding of the markets there. But first, what's your advice to Penny, ordinary citizen looking for work today on the road in Oklahoma, concerned about thousands of dollars evaporating in her accounts? What do you say to her?
Well, and there's not much I can say except to say, you know, these are difficult times, and we are in a period, just as for the last 25 years, we've been in a period of credit expansion and wealth creation. You are in a period of credit contraction and wealth destruction. So you have to be very careful protecting your wealth.
For how long? Some people are saying we're turning the corner now.
Yeah, no, I'm afraid that is not the case. I'm sorry to say that is not the case. So you have to recognize that we are in a bear market now. So that's what I can say to her. The legislators, the regulators, I don't think that we should go back to the over-regulated conditions that prevailed in the aftermath of the Great Depression. So I'm not in favor of regulation as such, because regulation is also imperfect and deficient, and it's even in many ways markets are better than regulators, because markets are more flexible. They adjust to conditions more easily. Regulators tend to be bureaucratic. And I must say that I testified before Congress recently, and I was really quite negatively impressed by the understanding of the legislators who are actually making those laws.
But please hold that thought, because I have to admit, now I'm a little confused. You don't like markets and you don't like regulation. We'll have to talk about what lives between those two, but we've got listeners with questions. Maybe right down that alley, George Soros. Let's go to Greg in Richmond, Virginia. Greg, you're on the air with Mr. Soros.
Tom, Mr. Soros, thank you for taking my call. Mr. Soros, you began your comment by referring to this began, or much of this began in 1980 during the Reagan administration, and you also referenced Mrs. Thatcher. That's a quarter of a century now, or a little better than a quarter of a century ago. And while I must preface my comments by saying I have a tremendous amount of respect for you from your business acumen and your accomplishments, I probably could not be more diametrically opposed politically. But having said that, what would you, and this is the ultimate back test with the ultimate 2020, what would you have done differently, and this is assuming that government regulation and government intervention or additional government intervention would be a good thing, and that is something I don't personally agree with, but I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. Over the past quarter century, what could have been, and in your opinion, what should have been done differently by government that would have perhaps prevented the situation that we're in now? Again, thank you for taking the call. I'll hang up and listen.
Greg, thanks. George Soros, that's as big as it gets, but you're on the spot. What do you say?
Thank you for the question. I'll try to answer it. You see, if you understand the how markets work, then I think you have to accept responsibility for regulating credit as well as regulating the money supply. You see, it's not enough to control the money supply. You also have to recognize that markets tend to go to extremes of optimism and pessimism, and therefore you have to also control or regulate the amount of credit that is available.
But doesn't the Fed essentially
do that?
You have
instruments. Pardon?
Doesn't the Federal Reserve essentially do that through its control of interest rates? Isn't that in effect?
No. They only control money.
Yes.
And you have instruments. You used to have instruments that were very effective in controlling credit. For instance, margin requirements for buying stocks, minimum reserve. Requirements for banks. Now, what I'm saying is that you do have those minimum reserve requirements. You need to change them depending on the credit conditions.
But would you have tightened up credit for the last 25 years? In that case, would we have missed the growth of the 80s, the boom of the 90s, to be growth of the early 2000s?
You see, for instance, you used to be able to the central bank used to be able to write a letter or to banks and say, well, you know, don't increase the portion of mortgages in your portfolio.
Yep.
In other words, don't lend for housing more because it's getting overheated. So that sounds
like regulation. You said you didn't like regulation.
No, this is a kind of regulation, but it's not excessive. Mm-hmm. But I think you do need to go back to that. I think you do need to regulate credit as well as money, and you need to accept responsibility for preempting asset bubbles from developing. If you recall, Alan Greenspan gave a speech talking about irrational exuberance very early in the, far too early in the IT bubble.
Too early.
But then, it was very early.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he stopped talking about it and he said, that's not my business.
Mm.
And I think it is his business. It ought to have been his business. Now, you shouldn't tighten credit, increase interest rates in order to reduce the IT bubble. You have to do something more specific about that area of the market. So, for instance, if you have excessive lending for real estate, then you say, well, you need to limit the amount of money that is available for mortgages, that you should not lend 100% on inflated values. You should only lend 90%.
So a little more foot on the brake
kind
there.
Of regulation.
Our time grows short. I know there's more we could say there, but so many listeners. Let's get a call from Berlin, Germany. Andreas, you're on the air with George Soros.
Yes, hello. Living in Berlin, I ran into political movement here that's talking about you a lot, and I'm kind of a little bit confused of what you said now, because it sounds like it's not a question of whether or not you would have regulation, because also free markets have a regulated structure with central banks and so forth.
Mm.
The reason I'm a bit confused is because I know you do a lot of charity work and you also make money, of course, on the financial markets and so forth. But what I don't understand is that these people who are with LaRouche, they talk about that you used to be working for Hitler and that you said in CBS interviews that you were quite proud of that work and that you had no remorse whatsoever about it and so forth.
Andreas, you're driving right off the map that I know, but George Soros, what's this?
Well, there is a campaign by somebody called LaRouche, who's a nut, and he makes all kinds of false accusations, but it's widely distributed and obviously has reached this gentleman. And all I can tell you that those accusations are absolutely groundless, false rumors.
Let me ask you about politics. You poured $20-plus million into the 2004 presidential campaign, trying to keep George Bush from winning re-election. He won anyway. Are you going to be involved in the U.S. presidential campaign this year, financially or any other way? And what did you learn from the failure of your 2004 effort?
Well, I felt at the time that the greatest benefit that mankind could have from my money, if it contributed to removing Bush from the White House, because he was I consider him a very bad president who followed very, very bad policies. I have nothing against him personally, but I was opposed to his policies, and I think he deliberately misled the public, and the invasion of Iraq was a terrible blunder.
Are you in the political game this time? Are you supporting Obama?
Well, I am supporting Obama, but not in anything of that kind, because I felt that was an exceptional situation where America was being very badly misled. And I hope, and I have a great deal more respect for Senator McCain. So while there is a choice to be made, I don't feel that strongly in opposition to one of the candidates as I did then.
George Soros, we have 20 seconds. Will the United States lead the world again, or is that period over? Will it be China or Europe?
No, I think that America's position in the world has definitely declined, but the world needs American leadership, and I hope that with a new president, America will resume the leadership position that it ought to have.
George Soros, his latest book is The New Paradigm for Financial Markets, The Credit Crisis of 2008 and What It Means. George Soros in New York, thank you very much for being with us.
A pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.